So, I mean, when you get into a Paralympics, and then it's the same for an Olympics, you're in this little bubble and you don't really see anything other than what you're doing. You're in the village and you're fully focused on what you're doing. So actually, I didn't get to experience any other sports, and people always find that really strange.
Yeah, I
I
could
was
see
so
that.
focused on what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people don't realize, is just the amount of focus and the time you put into things. I'm a complete pin badge geek as well.
So you're over collecting and stuff.
Yeah, that's a big part of any
Really?
Paralympics and Olympics, is trading pins,
I love it.
which didn't happen quite as much in Tokyo, obviously because of COVID, but
Mm.
there was still some pin trading going on. That's a little insight into
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Welcome to the future is female powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60 kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or a message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode 86, and I am super stoked not only to bring you a fabulous lifter, but somebody who's been to the damn Paralympics, man. Like, what is up? Like, to me, that never happens. And I got to speak with Miss Louise Sugden today. You know, this was a great podcast because I feel like it was an inside clip into things that we don't normally see, right? Like, we don't really see what goes on at on the Olympic level, you know, at these events. Louise has, or goes by Lou. Lou competed in 6 European championships, winning bronze in 5 of those 6. She received gold from the 2011 Paralympic World Cup. And she's competed in Beijing and the London Paralympic Games. Like, how amazing this is. And that was for basketball. So she talks about her career as a athlete in basketball, which is, I want to tell you right now, if you think you've been working hard and training hard with powerlifting, like, listen to what she does when she talks about her training for basketball. It was nuts. I was like, what? So stay tuned, because it's kind of amazing the type of training she had to do just for basketball. But when she switched over to powerlifting, she started in 2017. And 9 months after that, she won a silver medal at the 2011 Commonwealth Games. Like, come on, that's pretty freaking amazing. And she bronzed at the women's 86 kilo 2020 Paralympics in Tokyo, which is wow. Anyways, obviously an amazing woman. Really cool to speak with her today, because as a disabled athlete, she's able to, you know, train differently. And she talks about the things that she has to do in order to make it happen for herself. It's really cool to kind of just hear what she has to do, what sort of exercise she chooses to help bring up her weaknesses. So really cool interview. I hope y'all stick around for this one. And of course, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And if you are interested in nutrition or online powerlifting training, hit us up at core256.com. We work with a small amount of people, and we try to just help everybody get a little stronger every day. It's what I love. I mean, it's really what I love to do. And that's why I'm doing it so many damn years later. And thank you all for taking a screenshot, for sending a review, for doing the little things to connect with me online. I try to stay very active on Instagram, you know, not all the time, but I'm pretty active on Instagram. And anytime y'all tag me and stuff and send it to me, I love reposting it. I love knowing that, you know, some of the episodes are helping you make better decisions about your training, about how you're going to step on the platform or when you're going to step on the platform. So please keep doing that. Keep me posted. I love hearing this. Now let's get it started with Lou. I love basketball. So I played basketball whole life. And I think it's pretty awesome that you switched from basketball to powerlifting. So, I mean, this is pretty much how it's going to go. You know, it's very casual. I like to just hear your story. And then I'll just ask you questions like along the way. But I guess I would love to start off with, like, why did you start from powerlifting from basketball? Like, what made you do that transition?
I retired from basketball after a bit of an illness, and then I kind of went back to the day job as an accountant and got really bored really quickly. So I was like, okay, well, what sports can I try? And that was when I tried a couple of different things, and I tried powerlifting, and within a couple of months on a program, I'd got my bench press up from like 77.5 to 90 odd.
Wow.
And in a really, really short space of time. And wow. I was like, okay, I'm enjoying this. I'm pretty good at it. We'll see where we go. And that was kind of just how I got into powerlifting. It wasn't a sport that I'd ever really known that much about before I got into it. But when I played basketball, I was strong. I was one of the strongest on the team. I already had a really good bench press before I even started. Like 77.5 is decent for a woman. It was just one of those things. I was looking for something new and kind of just stumbled across it and fell in love.
Wow, that's so crazy. I feel like that's the story for a lot of people. You know, like anybody who was a previous athlete or did some sort of sports, they sort of now in their adulthood maybe can't, you know, run around as much, play soccer, all these things. So it's like, I always find that weightlifting and the competitive part of it is great for people who are still have that competitive spirit, but may not be able to compete in that sport anymore.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy how much less training I have to do when I play basketball.
What was the training like for basketball?
So I was training 2 or 3 times a day, 2 hour sessions. So it was intense. And now I do 1 2-3 hour session a day.
What? I have never 2-3 sessions a day of 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What is the practice? Are you doing like more like conditioning aspects in 1 hour and then like another, like how did they group that up? Or was it just all the same all the time?
It was a mix. It was like conditioning, skill work, teamwork, team play, that kind of thing. So there's a bit of everything. And then we'd have obviously gym sessions. Then we'd probably just have like scrimmage sessions and just play.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Well, because you were at a very competitive level, right?
Yeah. So I went to 2 Paralympic Games playing basketball. So I went to Beijing and London. So as a Brit, to compete in London was fantastic, like once in a lifetime kind of experience.
Oh, man, that's amazing. That's crazy. And so when you're competing in on that level, that's your job full time, right? Like that's what you're doing.
It did get to that point. Yeah. When I was training that much, there were points in my life where I tried to balance work and playing basketball, and it was just really difficult, especially as I was trying to qualify for my accountancy side of things, but you needed to do the work as well to be able to get the qualification. So it was a difficult time, but we got to the point where we got enough funding to be able to do it full time, which was very nice.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Then I wouldn't care if you're doing, you know, like a couple sessions a day. I mean, that's like your job, right? So it's like you're really going to be into that. That's so crazy. Okay, so I know that you competed. You took the gold, right, in the 2011 Paralympic World Cup.
Yeah.
I was looking at all your stats. It's crazy. You've competed in 6 European championships. You took bronze in 5 of them. You were in Beijing and London's Paralympic Games. But then you retired in 2016. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, because you're the only person I've ever had on that's been at that level. What was that like to compete? 1 in London and then Beijing. What is that like for you?
I think Beijing was just a bit of a blur for me, to be honest, because it was my first games and it was all very new. And I tried to kind of take in the experience as much as possible, but it was very much like, I don't know, I was kind of seeing it through someone else's eyes. I was like floating on this bubble.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And it was fantastic. It was a great experience. I really enjoyed it, but I felt like London, I kind of knew what I was doing and I knew what to expect. And I really, I loved London. London was fantastic, apart from the basketball, because we didn't have a great competition at all. Mm. We were a couple of minutes away from making a semi-final and just lost the game. And then we ended up seventh just because we put everything into that one match. Mm. So the results in London weren't great, but the experience itself was just phenomenal. And I think because it was kind of my day job, it didn't faze me as much potentially as if it was like my first competition. I think by the time I got to London, I was pretty established in the team. I was co-captain. So yeah, it was incredible, really.
Yeah. What are some things that are like maybe glimpses into the behind the scenes that you wouldn't see if you were me or somebody just watching? What sort of things were kind of cool to you being able to compete at that level?
So, I mean, when you get into a Paralympics, and then it's the same for an Olympics, you're in this little bubble and you don't really see anything other than what you're doing. Mm. You're in the village and you're fully focused on what you're doing. So actually, I didn't get to experience any other sports, and people always find that really strange.
Yeah, I
was so
that.
Focused on what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people don't realize is just the amount of focus and the time you put into things.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a complete pin badge geek as well.
So you're over collecting and stuff.
Yeah, that's a big part of any really? Paralympics and Olympics is trading pins.
I love it.
Which didn't happen quite as much in Tokyo, obviously because of COVID, but there was still some pin trading going on. That's a little insight into.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I didn't realize that was a thing. How many did you collect?
Oh God, I think I got like 10, 15 in Tokyo, but wow. I've got quite a big collection from London because I actually got given a lanyard full of them. So yeah.
Oh, that's okay. So like they give it to you and then you're able to trade so many that are from you guys. So is it your, is it your team logo or is it like the English? What is it on the pin?
I mean, for anything, like the teams all have their own individual pin badges. And then there were some like promotional ones from, I think back then it was TSB, and there was McDonald's had some.
Oh my gosh.
So all kinds of things. But yeah, it's big business, I'm telling you. Once you play
games. I bet you'll find some on eBay. Right. Some people trying to sell some like really old ones. I could see that. That's super cool. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about what your training is like. And I know that you have to, of course, train a little differently. What is the intensity? Is the how is the programming for you? Because it's one lift, it's benching. Do you bench all the time?
No, I bench 3 days a week.
Okay.
But in those 3 days, I will probably do two or three variations each time.
Okay.
When I bench. So, for example, on a Monday, I'll maybe do formal press. I'll do a partial press and then maybe like a narrow grip.
Okay.
So that's when Monday, Wednesday, Friday that I'll bench. And around that session as well, I'll do some accessory work. So shoulder stuff.
Okay.
And then Tuesday, Thursday is back day. So the back gets smashed.
I bet. I bet. What are some of your favorite back stuff?
Oh, I'm not a huge fan of back day, if I'm honest with you. I do enjoy like a barbell row.
Okay.
That's a good one because you could just take your aggression out on the bar.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy pull-ups. I enjoy the challenge of them.
Yeah.
But as a heavyweight lifter, yeah. I've not got a lot.
Yeah. Just pull-ups itself is like one of those exercises that it matters when you're heavier, you know, like that when you're really light, when I was like itty bitty, I was, yeah, I could pump 10 out, 15 out. Now it's like, okay, I got three in my, that's about as far as I want to get right now.
Yeah, when I played basketball, I think I used to be able to do 13, but shit. I was 20 kilos lighter then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my goodness. I think the one I could do the most was I was about 15 kilos lighter when I could do the most. Like it's a big difference, you know, and in the end, that all does matter.
I think I've managed like 9 since I've weighed really like 80 kilos. So, yeah, that's pretty decent, but I don't know how the range was towards the end of that set.
So when you're in season, you're training 3 days a week. Do you vary that training? Do you add in other things? Are you doing any other sports or anything like that? Or is it mostly just powerlifting?
It's pretty much all powerlifting. Like I will go out, get a little bit of, I'll go for a push in my chair, that kind of thing. Just, yeah. You know, keep a little bit of cardio in there, but not a lot, definitely not a lot. Those days are definitely behind me. But I do train 5 days a week. So I'll do bench on 3 days and then back on 2 days. So I'm busy training, but yeah, it's just a lot less intense than in the basketball days.
Yeah, my goodness. I can't even imagine with that amount of time on the court like that. And I laugh about it because my conditioning was so good, you know, when I was younger. And, you know, of course, it's not that good now. It's enough. I just need enough, right? Like you just need enough to not die on the platform and last all day. And I think that now, like you ran all the time. You're always, you know, you're going up and down the court all the time. So you need to have that conditioning aspect. So, yeah, you probably have some in there. You just like, you know, just enough to get you by.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I was so fit when I played basketball. Yeah. And I think back, it's like, wow, how did I do what I did then? It's unbelievable.
I mean, that's like 6 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot. And I slept very well, I could tell you that for sure. Although I find that powerlifting is a different kind of tired. Yeah. And like on a Friday, I have a pretty heavy session on a Friday. And I get home on a Friday and I just am wiped, completely wiped. Yeah. So yeah, it's a different kind of tired, but it's definitely, you know, less intense.
Yeah. I always say that like the running and things that I've done that with lifting heavy, especially at your level, your nervous system is just taxed and it's such a weird systemic sort of tiredness. It's not like it's not like the body is just, it's just such a weird overall weakness that I get. Like it's just exhausted, which is nice.
I find that I come back from training sometimes and I'll just sit and then half an hour will have gone past and I haven't really thought about it. I'm like, oh, okay.
I've just been sitting here. Something. I do the same thing. I'll just sit on my phone. Like I'll sit here and then I'll sit on the couch and just sit on the phone. And I'm like, it's like I needed that. You know, I needed that time for my brain to just kind of like not do anything, not take any stimulus. Yeah. What do you think has been some of the biggest changes for you changing over, obviously, I mean, from basketball to powerlifting? One, obviously, you're not putting as much intensity and all that throughout the week. But what do you think some other things that you've seen? Have you seen your body move differently or be stronger in other aspects besides the lift?
I mean, we've been working quite a lot on my core strength and, as a paraplegic, I don't have all of my core, but, Paralympic, powerlifting rules are really, really strict.
Can you tell me?
Basically you have to keep the bar level at all times. So level on your chest, level through the press. So with a weakness in my core, I was kind of rotating on my chest. So we've had to kind of develop that to make my core stronger so that I didn't have that weakness.
So if the bar rotates as it's coming up, it's a no lift?
If you can see it from the referee position, if it's rotating kind of from the top, it's okay. As long as it doesn't. So if you're watching it from the ref positions, if you can see it's not even, then it's a no lift.
Holy guacamole. Are you kidding me? That's crazy.
It's really strict, like crazy strict. And I get people watching my videos all the time. And they're like, well, what was wrong with that lift? I was like, well, these are the rules. And they're crazy strict.
I wonder why they chose to make that part so strict. I mean, that seems like. I don't know. I'm trying to imagine like the bar path. Yeah, you'd want it to be in a certain position, right? Because it's going to be most optimal. But like judging that too seems kind of crazy because it's already pretty strict. I mean, the, you know, most benching with the calls are already pretty strict, and there's so many things that can go. So that means, I mean, potentially you could have lifted so much more had it been like in a probably a regular federation and not the Paralympics.
Yeah, potentially. And I think, I mean, I guess that is part of it. It is the best of the best. Right. And it kind of makes sure that you're there because not only are you strong, but technically good.
Right.
So people watch me bench and they're like, wow, you're really good. I was like, well, I have to be because it was, I don't get lifts.
Yeah, I think I would be so nervous to judge that because I'm already, when I'm judging, you know, it's like, I just, please get it. In my mind, I never want to give a red light. You know, it's like, it's always one of those things. So it's like adding one more thing on there. Yeah, that definitely complicates and changes. You have to be very, very diligent about your technique because you can't ingrain, right? Because even, I think a lot of people will be like, especially with technique, they'll try to just, you know, toe the line a bit. And of course, when you get to a maximal weight, you're going to revert back to what your body does. And if you've already ingrained that it's okay to have a little variance here and there, it'll just revert back to that. And that would just be awful.
I think my perfectionism comes in quite handy there because I'm very, very strict on myself. But then statistically, you need to be getting 2 out of 3 in comp to be winning medals. So, you know, you've got to be good. You've got to be up there with the best. So. Yeah. Yeah, got to be strict.
Yeah, well, that's good. Most people are not. You know, most people are not focusing on that. What would you say are some challenges that you have to go through with, you know, just benching and your training in general that we might not know about?
So one of the biggest challenges I actually have is trying to find people to help me train because there's only a certain amount I can do on my own. I can only actually unrack about 105 kilos. I say only.
Great.
But when my working weights are like 110, 120, it means that I'm quite limited on what I can do.
Right.
So it's finding people to train with me regularly is one of the hardest things I actually have to overcome. Not a daily basis because I train centralized half the week. But when I'm at home, I have to basically get family or friends. And my mom actually did most of my training with me in the build up to the Paralympic Games.
Oh my gosh, your mom was handing off to you. How cool is that?
And she was she got really nervous once we got up to like 120 kilos. And I said to her, like, if I can't press this, I'll be able to do some of it. You literally just have to, you know, assist.
Yeah.
So she got a lot more confident, but yeah, she would never do any of the really, really heavy stuff with me. So I'd find a couple of burly guys for that.
Yeah, there is a sense of confidence with that too, right? Like with my husband in the beginning, I was like, what do you expect me to do? Like I can, you know, lift it off. But if you miss it, what do you want me to do? And he's like, just roll it off my body. You just help me roll it off. And I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Don't put the clips on the end. You're fine.
Yeah, right. Especially. And you were saying that part of your core is not, you're not able to develop it the same way.
Yeah, that's part of my disability. Yeah. So it's something that we've had to be quite creative to work on.
Okay. So what kind of stuff do you do?
So I do a variation of a Palov press, but essentially I will be strapped onto a bench to do it because I can't brace through my legs, it's almost those straps are then doing the job of my legs.
Right.
So it just enables me to use my core more.
Yeah.
It looks really weird.
So you're laying down, you're pressing up, is it pulling from one side?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And so do you guys focus on one side more than the other since one side might be more affected, or you do both?
I do more sets on my weak side than on my strong side.
That'd be cool. I mean, I think that's a great – and that's the kind of special exercises that you have to do if you really want to target certain areas, you know? But I've never – I've always seen kneeling or standing or – but never laying down Palov press. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's a variation that we've kind of developed over the years, and it does seem to do the job. So,
yeah. Was there any other exercises that you do that might be a little unconventional?
We do a lot of work on thing called a K-box, which I don't know if you've heard of, but basically it works you more eccentrically.
Yes.
So we've got a lot of stuff that we do on that, which is quite unconventional. And it's not a piece of equipment that most people have heard of.
Yeah. So are you doing, what exercises are you doing on it?
Well, today, for example, I was doing rows on it. Okay. So you row in, and then you have to then control the eccentric part of the row.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting.
Yeah.
Get on it for quite a lot of tricep stuff as well.
That'd be great.
Yeah. It's hard. Really hard.
All right, so are you facing behind and doing like a press uh-huh. up?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Overhead.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough. When you get it nice and heavy, and then it's pulling you back as well. And then also on that machine, every now and again, they'll put a little bit of overload on it mm-hmm. so that the coaches will speed up the concentric so that then you've got more to resist eccentrically, which is absolutely horrendous.
So for everybody who's listening, a K-box is sort of like a cable system exercise machine, not huge. It has a cable, I don't even know how to describe this, but it works on sort of like a velocity. So it turns, the harder you pull it, the more it pulls back. So the idea is that if you are, like in her case where she's tricep extending, it's going to pull her back. And as the, coaches are pulling it faster one way, it's going to pull back the other way faster. It kind of works like almost like an aerodyne bike, I would say, something very similar in that sense. But yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah,
it's brutal. My friend has one at his gym, and every time I'm there, I'm like, oh, this is fun. But not everybody has that. That's definitely something special.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it. So you, okay, and when I was looking at your powerlifting, so you start in 2017, and only 9 months after starting the sport, you won a silver medal at the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
In 2018. How was that for you?
It was surreal, completely surreal, because I wasn't even supposed to be eligible to qualify for the Commonwealth Games.
Why is that?
The only reason I was able to qualify is because there was an earthquake in Mexico. So the World Championships got postponed by a couple of months, which meant that I was then able to go to those, which was the qualifying event for the Commonwealth Games. So it was all just good luck, really, at the time. I made the most of the opportunity. And what I didn't actually know at the time was that they were only giving out a gold and a silver at Commonwealth Games. So my last lift, if I hadn't got it, I would have gone away with nothing. So,
That's
one
crazy.
Of those moments where my coaches didn't actually tell me that. And I'm very glad they didn't.
That's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure. And especially because, you know, I was still very new to the sport. Technically nowhere near as good as I am now. So, to not have that extra pressure definitely was the right call.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. All right. So this is the part of the show where I ask my guests,
what the hell is wrong with you people?
What the hell was I thinking? Where you think back in a time, could be in basketball, could be in powerlifting, where you did something really stupid and then you thought back like, why did I do that? Why did I decide to do that? Like, it's a hindsight thing. Is there anything that you can think of?
Oh, God. You know, the first thing that came to mind when you said that was at the Paralympic Games in Tokyo. I went out for my first lift, pressed it easily, got the lift, no problem, as an opener should be. Put it up, I think, 4 kilos? No, 3 kilos, sorry. And then went out. And just didn't press it. Like, it just stopped halfway.
Oh my gosh.
Nothing other than bar path. And it's literally one of those things where you're like, well, I've got this weight. I know I can press this weight. What am I doing? And it was one of those real gut check times.
Oh, like, that sucks.
I went out for my third knowing that I had to press it if I wanted to medal at the Paralympic Games of all places. Like, the phenomenal pressure that I put on myself by missing that middle lift. And it was something so simple as bar path. And it's like, I look back and I'm like, I could have done that so easily.
Yeah.
And I could have given myself another opportunity to press even more. But yeah, that is the first thing that sprung to mind.
Oh, man.
It's just something so simple.
Yeah. And so do you have to take, if you miss it, do you have to take the same weight or can you still go up?
You can still go up, but to medal, I didn't need to go up. I just needed to get the lift.
There's
a lot of self-talk going on. Like, you know, you can lift this. Absolutely need to just sort it out.
That's, you know, the pressure. I can't imagine the pressure and just being at something like that, like as an athlete, you know, in knowing to me, like powerlifting, because it's technical and you can easily get in your head about things. So it's like that environment. I mean, that's gotta be a lot of pressure. That's freaking awesome though. Yeah. What the hell was I thinking?
I watch it back and I'm just like, and then I watch the one that I got after it. And I was like, that's such an easy lift.
This has been great. And I'm so excited that people get to listen to your story because, you know, you're the first Paralympic we've ever had. And I know there are more people out there who are wanting to, especially women. It's not necessarily the most, you know, it's a niche sport. And so if there are more women out there that can be inspired by your story, I'm sure there will be. But thank you so much for taking this time. This has been fantastic.
Thank you.